From Foreign Policy, I'm Sarah Wildman, and this is First Person. Today, what it's like to be a journalist when your country is slipping into autocratic rule. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has made headlines this past month, mostly for his efforts to hold Saudi Arabia accountable for the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi.
In front of a packed parliament in Ankara, Turkey's president today provided the highest-level accusation that Saudi Arabia premeditated the killing of a critic.
Khashoggi walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul last month and never walked out. Erdogan's government has parceled out information over the past few weeks indicating that he was brutally murdered.
Erdogan confirmed three teams' movements from the airport to a hotel and to the consulate where Jamal Khashoggi was killed. He also provided small new details. He said one of the teams did reconnaissance in a local forest.
The incident has allowed Erdogan to portray himself as an advocate for human rights and press freedom.
Khashoggi was a Saudi national, but on top of that, he was a world-renowned journalist. And this, of course, gives us an international responsibility. Whitewashing such barbarity will, of course, injure and wound the conscience of all humanity.
But at home, Turkish journalists find their own freedoms curtailed. Increasingly, Erdogan has become less tolerant of a free press. The Turkish newspaper Cumhuriyet discovered this in 2015 after publishing news that cast Erdogan's government in a poor light. The fallout from the incident wound up dramatically altering the life of not just the paper and its staff, but also the editor-in-chief, Can Dündar. We reached him in exile in Germany. Can, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I actually want to start our story in 2015, when you became the editor of Cumhuriyet, and I want to know a little bit about the newspaper.
Cumhuriyet means republic in Turkish, and this is the oldest newspaper in Turkey, almost 100 years old, and one of the most prestigious papers in Turkey. And it's a kind of leftist paper and always in the opposition side and very critical about the Erdogan government. So it was a great honor for me when I was appointed as the editor-in-chief of Cumhuriyet.
How long after you became the editor did you decide to publish a piece and images describing how Turkey was smuggling weapons to Islamic militants in Syria?
Just 3 months later, because I have become the editor-in-chief on February and we published the story in May.
What led you to decide to publish those images?
Well, first of all, it was a great story and everybody was keen on finding this material, but everybody's scared to publish it. And it was a big issue in Turkish politics. The government was denying that they were smuggling arms to Syria, and we knew that they were trafficking arms to the radical Islamists in the region, but we couldn't prove it. And when I saw these documents, this video, I, of course, immediately decided to publish them, of course, without knowing the consequences.
Can you tell us a bit about what those consequences were?
Well, in the beginning, in fact, we were warned by our lawyers about the possible consequences. At least the legal charges were waiting for us. But it's normal, you know, if you're a journalist in Turkey, it's normal that you may face with consequences. But I didn't know that the government would be so furious about the footage, because when we published the story the other day, the then Prime Minister Erdogan said the journalists who published this story would pay a heavy price. So I've been paying this price since then.
Erdogan said that you had exposed state secrets. Do you think that there was any reason to not publish them for that reason?
Well, first of all, we didn't know that it was a state secret because it was a secret. So if it's secret, how can we know that it was a state secret? But everybody was talking about this, even in the parliament. Look, this was Turkey's Iran Gate story, I guess. So the government was doing something totally illegal, and it was an international crime. So as a journalist, we should make a decision if we are responsible of keeping the state secrets or we are responsible of revealing it. If a government is, you know, in a kind of illegal operation, of course, it's our duty, our responsibility, our mission to make the public aware of it. So that's why we didn't even think about it. And we just decided to publish it. And all the newsroom was really very excited. And nobody was really scared of it.
A few months after it was published, you were arrested and put in prison.
In fact, Erdogan couldn't arrest us just right away because there was June elections. And before the elections, he didn't want to cause any trouble by arresting us. And there was a G20 summit after this in Turkey, and he didn't want to show the world that he's arresting some journalists because of this news story. And after the elections and after the G20 summit is over, Erdogan was more stronger, and then he decided for our arrest. And in fact, somehow I was expecting it because of his reactions. It was kind of obvious that he would do something about this. But, I mean, arresting the editor-in-chief of the most prestigious paper in Turkey was, yeah, a bit difficult. So the reactions was really great at that stage.
What were the reactions?
Mainly the public, really. There was a huge demonstrations in front of the paper for days. And, of course, the main opposition party and the other parties reacted. Then there were demonstrations in front of the jail. And many colleagues starts to spend days in front of the prison just to give support to us. And it has become a kind of campaign.
But you were put in jail for 3 months. What was it like in jail? What happened there?
If you're a journalist in Turkey, it's part of your business, you know, to be jailed. So you go to school, you start studying, and then you go to start working, and you go to jail. It's unfortunately, it's part of your career. So that's why I was really prepared for this. My books were ready, the books I wanted to read and to write. So that's why it was not that harmful. It was just for 3 months and you can spend years in jail. But I was in solitary confinement, and that means you're not allowed to see anyone for weeks except your lawyers. But thanks to my lawyers, I was not alone because they were always coming to my prison and to see me. And some parliamentarians were also coming. And that's why I didn't feel alone, really.
Were you scared?
No, I was not scared because I knew that it's difficult for them to kind of attack me in prison. On the contrary, my son was visiting me saying that you are secure here, because this is the only place that you can be safe and sound. Otherwise, the country was in trouble at those weeks. So being in jail somehow can protect you from any kind of attack.
When you released from prison provisionally, you were actually approached and shot at by a gunman. Can you tell me what happened?
It was the day of decision. In front of the courthouse, we were waiting for the decision of the judges. And the police, supposedly protect me, was not around at that day, very day. I don't know why. And I saw someone coming towards me, and he shouted, "Traitor." And this is the word the president used to use for us. And he shot at me twice. And then I realized that my wife just jumped over him and protect me somehow, and in a way saved my life. And then the other police arrived and took his gun. So it was, again, part of the life of Turkish journalists. There are many who were killed because of their stories, but somehow I survived. But you know what? He was released after 5 months in prison and quitted and didn't get any punishment at all from this. And the judges just freed him and gave him his passport back.
And I want to confirm that the word he shouted was traitor. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, traitor. In fact, it has become my book's title.
So you appealed the decision, which was actually to send you back to jail for, I think, 5 years. But during the appeals process, you were allowed to leave the country. What happened while you were outside the country? The coup took place. Tell me about why you decided to leave to begin with.
In fact, after I was released, I had my passport, so I was capable of visiting many countries. So we got a lot of awards and invitations. So I went several countries for 5 months, and I was always coming back to Turkey because, you know, I never thought of leaving the country. But in the summer, I needed a holiday, and I went to Spain, Barcelona, in fact, to complete my book. And I was alone there. And then on the 15th of July, this military intervention attempt has happened in Turkey. So my lawyers warned me that it's not safe for me anymore to go back to Turkey because there's no rule of law anymore. And there was a state of emergency. And the first thing they've done was to arrest the high judges who were decided for our release. So, believe it or not, they are still in the same jail with me at the moment.
The judges themselves are still in jail?
Yeah, the high judges of the Constitutional Court are still in jail.
So you said you were in Spain by yourself, so your wife didn't travel with you and remained in Turkey?
Yeah, it is really a horrible thing that when I decided to stay in Germany, I asked my wife to come and join me, and she was at the airport, and at the airport, the passport police stopped her and took her passport without any reason and saying that you're not allowed to leave the country. And it was 2.5 years ago, and since then, we haven't seen each other. So it's a kind of taking hostage. She's a hostage at the moment. And that's without any reason, because there's no investigation or any accusation about or against her. And Erdogan is keeping her just to punish me. And I was a journalist during the military time in Turkey, and even the soldiers didn't touch the families. And it's really amazing that now he's using her as a hostage.
Is she at personal risk as well?
I guess everybody in Turkey who is involved in politics against the government are in risk, under risk. Even if she's not a journalist, there's nothing against her. But of course, I mean, being my wife is a kind of crime in Turkey. So she's under surveillance because she's my wife.
Do you personally feel safe in Germany yourself?
Well, again, I mean, if you're challenging a government like Erdogan's, you can't feel secure anywhere in the world because you can see Erdogan's hand over Europe or other countries, and he's trying to prove that he is capable of punishing his opponents everywhere in the world. That's why the Turkish intelligence service is so active in Germany, and there are a lot of pro-Erdogan radicals living in Germany. That's why it's not the safest place, unfortunately, for someone like me.
Does that mean you change where you live? Does it mean you keep security with you? How does it translate in practical terms?
Yeah, in the daily life, of course, you have to be careful, as you must in Turkey. But if I do something in public, the security come and protect me. So it's not an easy life, of course. Last time Erdogan was in Germany last month, and during his press conference with Chancellor Merkel, he blamed me for being an agent during the press conference. So if a president openly in a press conference accuses a journalist for being an agent, so it's a kind of message to his supporters who wants to be a hero in the eyes of Erdogan. So that's why you must be careful what you're writing and what you're doing.
You have colleagues who remained in Turkey as well, including colleagues from your newspaper. Are they at risk?
Yeah, they. I mean, after me, the whole newsroom spent almost a year in prison, together with editors, writers, reporters. Even our tea maker was in jail. So it was a kind of punishment to the whole paper. And they couldn't find anything against the paper. And they were accused of being a member in the terrorist organization or aiding and abetting to the terrorist organizations. But they couldn't find any evidence for this. And we were judged just because of our editorial policy. But Cumhuriyet is still there and keep on fighting.
Do you feel a sense of personal responsibility to those that remain in Turkey while you're in Europe?
Well, somehow, yes, of course. I mean, I was the editor-in-chief, even though we decided altogether for publishing this news. And it was not only this. I mean, our whole editorial policy was judged and was punished. But, of course, I was the editor-in-chief. That's why I've been struggling from exile to give them a voice, as they are kind of under heavy risk now. And some of them are kind of silent. And that's why it's a huge responsibility now for me to give voice to the voiceless.
You launched an opposition newspaper in Germany.
Yeah, it's a website in Turkish and German. And when I arrived to Germany, I decided to launch a new media outlet that I can reach my readers and audience from Germany. But of course, it's not easy because it was banned even before we started, even without knowing what we would publish. They banned the website in Turkey.
So it's not accessible in Turkey currently? Is that what that means?
But the Turkish people know how to bypass that kind of censorship. They are experienced on this. And thanks God we got a lot of other means to reach our audience. But it's not easy to find out reporters to work with, people who are willing to talk to us. You know, it's really very difficult. And this is the kind of problems of the exile media, which is a new medium in the countries like Turkey.
Let's turn to something that's been, you know, making international headlines, which is the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. When did you hear about it and how did you hear about it?
Well, of course, I'm watching closely what's going on in my country. So the Khashoggi case was something extraordinary and very dangerous. In fact, we knew that there was a kind of tension between the Turkish and Saudi governments because of first the Muslim Brothers. Erdogan was in favor of Muslim Brothers, who was regarded as a terrorist organization by the Saudis. And in return, the Saudis were supporting the Kurdish movement in Syria, YPG, who was regarded as a terrorist organization by the Turkish government. So there was a tension between the two, and Erdogan named Khashoggi as his friend. So Khashoggi was also in favor of the Muslim Brothers. That's why, I guess, in the background, there was a tag of war between the Saudis and Turkey. So this murder is a kind of message to Erdogan, but it helps Erdogan to present himself as the protector of human rights and press freedom to the world audience, which was really a bit weird.
Why do you think that Erdogan is leaking the evidence so slowly as he's been doing?
He's playing a game, and he's been using the foreign media, and he's leaking the evidence bit by bit, and not in his own media, but to the foreign media, trying to first punish the Saudi government and to create a kind of anti-Saudi climate in the world. And at the same time, he's trying to rebuild his image in the eyes of the world. And in fact, it's hypocrisy, really, to see Erdogan defending a journalist's rights is really something, a black comedy for me, because the only difference between Khashoggi and me is my attacker just missed, but Khashoggi's murders didn't miss him. So Erdogan was encouraging to kill journalists in a way. So how can such a president be seen as the protector of journalists?
You're very critical of Erdogan now, obviously, but in the early 2000s, you had some praise for him. Why was that?
Not really. I mean, he used to be an Islamist, a radical Islamist before he came to power. That's why we had, of course, question marks in the beginning as the secular, representing the secular part of this country. So he's not a believer of democracy, secularism, or press freedom from the beginning. But when he, for example, tried a kind of peace deal with Kurds or with the Armenians, of course we supported him in this case because it was important for Turkey. But he was always playing games, you know, he was not sincere, and he was just trying to find out what is best for his policies and to stay in power. That's why I don't think he changed a lot, but his policies changed because he is not in a position to play games anymore because he's got the backing of 50% of the people together with the European governments, so he doesn't need to play games anymore.
Is there such a thing as an independent media in Turkey today?
To be honest, there are two papers left who can show a kind of opposition, but under very heavy risk. And some internet sites, they are very careful about taking risks, but the self-censorship is there. And I don't see anyone who dare to publish a story about his corruption case, for example, or our story about this arms trafficking to Syria could not be published anymore. So under very heavy risk and under very heavy conditions, some of my colleagues are still struggling for a free media, but I'm afraid in the coming months it won't be that easy even for them.
How do you think Turkey can move forward? Or is it the only path is towards authoritarianism?
Well, the army used to be the protector of the secular regime in Turkey, but Erdogan succeeded to send them to barracks, back to barracks again, and get rid of from the political scenery. So, unfortunately, without the army, there's no civil society that can protect the secular life in Turkey. And imagine that a leader that is now controlling the government, the parliament, the judiciary, education, media, police force, the army, academia, and the whole economy. So it's really difficult to challenge someone like him. And he has the leverage to win the elections easily by controlling all those powers. And there's no separation of powers anymore. That's why it's difficult for the opponents to oppose the government, because the country is still under the state of emergency rules, even if Erdogan lifted it. So there's no demonstrations allowed, or media is not allowed to publish any story against the government, etc. But on the other hand, still 50% of the people still voting against him and kind of resisting to this aggressive government. And this is the hopeful part of it. And thanks God the world now understands better what kind of a government we are dealing with. And that's why I'm not that pessimistic. But there is no organization or leader who can organize the opposition. The second opposition party's leader is in jail for more than a year now. And the main opposition party is really under heavy pressure, and one of their parliamentarians are still in jail. So it must be so easy to run a country if your opponents are in jail or under pressure. And that's why we need an international solidarity with the other countries, because it's not only Turkey, as you see. I mean, it's a global illness, this authoritarian rules.
Jean, what does the future hold for you?
I really don't know. So after this story, I lost my country, I lost my family, I lost my job, I lost my house, I lost my library. I started all from the beginning again. But it's an experience, so still learning. But now it's a new stage, of course, in my life, a new chapter. So I don't know what would happen in next week, you know, if Erdogan won't be there tonight. I can go back tomorrow, but it's not easy. So we are trying to organize our opposition from outside. And we are trying to inform our readers from outside. It will take time. It won't be easy. But I just want to say to the listeners that we need their solidarity. We need to get rid of this government, because Turkey is a unique example for the world, with a huge Muslim population in a democratic, partly democratic and secular regime. So if we can succeed it in this way, that would be a very good example for the rest of the Muslim countries. And if Turkey was in European Union or stays in the Western world, that would be really helpful to ease the tension between the Christian and Muslim worlds, or the East and West. And that's why Turkey shouldn't be sacrificed. The Turkish people still struggling and needs international support.
You yourself said at the beginning, though, that journalists can expect to be jailed in Turkey. Why would anyone become a journalist in Turkey today?
In my eyes, they are heroes, really. I mean, to be a journalist in Turkey means you're ready to sacrifice everything. It's more than a job, it's kind of a mission. And you are not a journalist, you are also a kind of freedom fighter, because our country is burning and our house is burning, so we can't just pretend like a journalist and taking notes about this fire. We have to carry water, or we have to jump in and save our loved ones. So it's a big struggle. So many journalists in Turkey trying to save their country and save their loved ones. And it's more than a journalism. It's like saving a country.
I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Jean Dündar, former editor-in-chief of the Turkish newspaper Cumhuriyet. He chronicled his experiences in a book called We Are Arrested, A Journalist's Notes from a Turkish Prison. Since the 2016 coup attempt in Turkey, Erdogan's government has jailed scores of journalists. First Person is produced by Dan Efron and edited by Rob Sachs. I'm Sarah Wildman, and I've been your host.